We have a bit of a love affair with the sea and other bodies of water. There's a lot of romance at the water's edge and on the water itself, obviously. So a good chunk of human literature is devoted to the sea, much of it in song. Songs about bodies of water make up a large part of the repertoire of folk singer Tim Holt, who hails from the Dunsmuir area and has a couple of programs coming up in Jackson County at the library in Medford on March 31st, at the library in Rouche on the 1st of April, and the library in Jacksonville on the 2nd of April. So a bit of a library itinerary there. Tim Holt, good to see you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, nice to be back, actually. We talked about my previous slightly unrelated programs.
But. Well, yeah, you used to be involved with Railroad Days in Dunsmuir, so I know you over the phone, but this is the first time we've had a chance to meet in person. Good to have you here. Is music a job or is it a sideline to a job?
Well, I would say it's a part-time job. It's something that I've been doing for, about the last 10 years and in this area and also in the Bay Area. I go down to San Francisco and do some of these programs. And mainly I'm a writer and a journalist, so this is, I guess you could say it's a sidelight.
There's a huge body of stuff in any genre, and this is the folk genre. I mean, and how have you gravitated to songs of the sea?
I had a library, actually the one down in Reading, I think it was, asked me if I think it was a reading program or something they were doing. This was a while ago, and they just asked if I could do a program with that theme, you know, rivers and oceans.
Mm-hmm. And did that begin some research on your part, or did you,
it
could,
did.
Could you come up with a whole bunch off the top of your head?
No. I had to do some research, and but it does, as you can imagine, there are a lot of songs, folk songs that relate to water. Mm-hmm. You know, as well as drinking, although we won't get into that right now.
Right. Let me come back to your own folk stuff. I'm going to guess, just based on a guess on age, that you probably grew up during the big folk revival of the 50s and 60s.
Exactly right. And that's when I started getting interested in folk music, when I heard the Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary on the radio.
I don't know how much of the history you know about that, but I'm just trying to figure out why there was that upswelling. I remember it myself from my own childhood. Hootenanny was a regular weekly TV show with folk singers.
You know, that's an excellent question, and I don't have an excellent answer. I think people were just looking for, this was right after rock and roll, fairly shortly after rock and roll really began to be popular. And I just have to think that a certain segment of the population was looking for something more authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing is with rock and roll, it tends to be about one subject, which is love and romance. And there are a lot of folk songs about that. But as you're going to hear today, folk music can be about just about anything dealing with American life. So
why don't we get into that? You have the first one you chose to bring in here is called Pay Me. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is what's called a work song. Mm-hmm. And on ships and boats, they had apparently quite a few work songs the crews would do, you know, while they were hauling ropes or whatever they were doing. This one happens to be a song that was sung by loading crews. Specifically, an African-American crew loading different commodities at the Savannah River in Georgia. It was recorded by the famous duo of John and Alan Lomax, who recorded some 60,000 songs for the Library of Congress back in the 30s and 40s. The only other thing about this song, as you'll see, is so this crew, you know, they hear that the ship is about to sail fairly soon, like the next day or something. Well, they're concerned about getting paid. That's kind of the theme of this song.
Let's back the microphone up about a foot so we can get both guitar and voice in there. And away we go with Tim Holt here on the Jefferson Exchange.
I thought I heard the captain say, pay me my money down. Tomorrow is our sailing day. Pay me my money down. Yeah, pay me, pay me. Pay me my money down. Pay me or go to jail. Pay me my money down. I wish I was Mr. Rockefeller's son. Pay me my money down. I'd sit on the bank and watch the work done. Pay me my money down. I wish I was Mr. Bill Gates' son. Pay me my money down. I'd sit in the house and drink good rum. Pay me my money down. Yeah, pay me, pay me. Pay me my money down. Pay me or go to jail. Pay me my money down.
Now, it was updated just a little bit, as you probably heard, with,
how
with
so?
Mr. Gates.
Oh, yeah, with Bill Gates. That's right.
The Rockefeller,
the Rockefeller part. Was
that's it? An original, but we decided to embellish it a little bit.
Tim Holt, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a folk singer from the Dunsmuir area, performing songs. Is it strictly Songs of the Sea at these presentations coming up at the libraries?
The ones that I'm doing in late March and early April vary. There's one on the folk song revival period. That's the one at Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I'm doing at Medford, I'm doing a history of this country as told through the American folk song. Mm-hmm. That's on the 31st. And then in Jacksonville, April 2nd, I actually come out as Pete Seeger with a banjo and tell all about my life, all the important movements he was involved in, of course, the civil rights movement, and then sing songs that were important to his life.
Yeah, Pete Seeger was an interesting character, not just a protest singer, but a protester. I remember reading an article about him in The New Yorker a couple of years before he died about the mm-hmm. fact that he would pick up a sign and pick it for just about anything. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make it sound like Pete Seeger was just like compulsively out there protesting, but the fact is he believed what he sang about, and he did it through more than just songs.
Yeah. Yeah, and he went to jail, you know, during the House Un-American Activities.
In the McCarthy period.
Not fessing up to whether he's a communist and all that. He didn't think it was any of their business. So, and he was stoned and all that during civil rights demonstrations. So,
I admire by other people.
Yeah.
Hit by rocks.
in that sense, no. He kind of walked the walk. I think that's what I'm trying to say, and that's why I respect him a lot.
So compare him with Woody Guthrie, a generation before, who also wrote songs like A Man of the People. But there's some interesting facets that you've pointed out in your work with his gig writing songs about the Columbia River and the dams.
Yeah. Woody Guthrie, as I think most people know, was very definitely a free spirit. He just roamed around the country. He wrote over 1,000 songs in between 1932 and 1952, played in bars, nightclubs, whatever. But for a very brief period, he was actually hired by the U.S. Department of Interior. This was in 1941. And they chauffeured him up and down the Columbia River. He just kind of soaked up the scenery and the atmosphere and wrote 26 songs about the river. Now, in particular, what they were trying to do was promote the development of public power dams, along the Columbia River. They had finished the Bonneville, I think, and they were at work on the Grand Coulee. There was a push by private power companies to, provide power to the people as opposed to public power. So Guthrie was hired to really promote public power on the Columbia River. And he was paid something like $244 for his services. Yeah.
But I've heard this described before, though, as writing love songs for dams. Is that oversimplifying what's going
on? No, I think that's a good way to put it. You'll hear the song that I'm going to do. I don't know if you'd call it exactly a love song, but it's definitely with a lot of humor in it. It's promoting the cause of public power dams.
And actually, the song is called Talkin' Columbia?
Yes, it is.
All right, so we'll push the microphone away again, and here is Tim Holt talking Columbia from Woody Guthrie.
I was down along the river just sitting on a rock, looking at the boats in a Bonneville lock. Gate swings open, boat sails in, toots her whistle, she's gone again. Gasoline going up, wheat coming down. Filled up my hat brim, I drank a little taste. I thought about a river just a going to waste. Thought about the dust, thought about the sand, thought about the people, and I thought about the land. People all over creation just looking for some kind of little place. Now the folks back east, they done a lot of talking, and some of them squawking and some of them balking, but for all of their figures, all of their books, them boys just didn't know their royal Chinooks. Salmon, that's a good river, just needs a string of them big power dams along it. So I pulled out my pencil and I scribbled this song. I figured all of them salmon just couldn't be wrong, 'cause them salmon fish, they're mighty shrewd.
They got senators and politicians, and just like a president, they run every 4 years. You just watch this river, and pretty soon, people gonna be changing their tune, cause the big Grand Coulee and the Bonneville Dam gonna run 1,000 factories for Uncle Sam. Gonna make everything from sewing machines, sewing needles, atomic bedrooms, plastic automobiles, plastic. Everything's gonna be plastic. Uncle Sam needs wool, Uncle Sam needs wheat, Uncle Sam needs houses and stuff to eat, Uncle Sam needs water and power dams, Uncle Sam needs the people and the people need the land. Now, I don't think much of dictators myself, but I think everything in this country ought to be run by electricity. That's Talking Columbia.
Tim Holt on the Jefferson Exchange, our guest this morning. Thanks so much for being here. He's got programs coming up on March 31st at the Medford Library, April 1st at the Rusch Library, and April 2nd at the Jacksonville Library. A couple things come really clear about that song from Woody Guthrie. One is it's amazing how much he and his son Arlo sound alike in their mm-hmm. in their approach to songs. I mean, it's not that amazing given that, you know, they're father and son. But also, so many of the things that we know in the Northwest, Chinook salmon, for example, mentioned in the song, but the dam seen as something of an aid to those, which is not necessarily the view in today's world. So yeah, things have certainly changed over time.
Yeah, it's not as fashionable, of course, to promote dams, but I just want to say that in those days, coming really still to some extent in the Depression, providing electricity to farmers, the dams also provided irrigation for those high desert lands, you know, along the river. Guthrie really, I think honestly, he was not generally a big government supporter, but I think he honestly felt that this was one case where the government really was trying to help the people who needed it.
And interesting, too, that when you consider the time, because this was in 1941 that he wrote all these songs, right? So
yes.
World War II going on in other parts of the world, not involving the United States yet,
right,
but would within a matter of months. And obviously concerns about the people who are running other parts of the world. And just looking for pictures of you yesterday, so we could put them on the website, ended up finding several pictures of Woody Guthrie with his guitar with the sticker on it that said, "This machine kills fascists."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he and Pete Seeger eventually took up the cause of, World War II. We don't need to go into all this for this program, but basically after Hitler invaded the Soviet Union. And you can imagine that leftists, you know, progressive leftists would be a little upset about their Soviet Union being attacked. So it was both a combination, I think, of being against fascism and, frankly, pro-Russia, really, for them, for that side.
In the songs that Woody Guthrie wrote about the Columbia, essentially working to promote the new dams that were going to be creating electric power, I mean, were there any that were more specifically about the river itself? I mean, anything romantic about the water and the native people or anything like that?
So yeah, a little bit of it. Roll
on.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on.
Nicely conjured up. Thanks for that. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. It's interesting because that song really comes roaring back because it was the one that Mr. Rybacki had us all play in third grade music.
Yeah.
And
I think that's probably the most of the 26 songs that he wrote, you know, in that 1 month period. I think that's probably the best known one.
Right, so that brings us to another river as we continue with the water theme here, because Pete Seeger, who we talked about a little bit already, ever so much the protester and protest songwriter, had some strong feelings about the river that he lived nearest to, which is the Hudson in New York, which was pretty awful by the 1960s.
Yeah, he kind of morphed from a civil rights activist to an environmental activist during that period. And what happened is he was able to make some money as a folk singer by the 60s, and he went out and bought a small sailboat. But as he tells it, you know, he got out on the Hudson River, and he
noticed that the water was discolored by chemical residues from factories along the river. He saw toilet waste floating past him. And so he, had this great idea, very ambitious idea, to build a replica old-time sailing ship. And he and, of course, a lot of volunteers did it. It turned out to be 109-foot long boat they called the Clearwater. And it was staffed by musicians that included Ramblin' Jack Elliott and Don McLean. In 1972, they sailed it all the way to Washington, D.C. to lobby for the Clean Water Act, which passed a few weeks after that. So it was a successful campaign, and, you know, he wrote a number of songs during that campaign, and this is one of them. That
it's called Sailing Up My Dirty Stream, is that right? Tim Holt, yes. Here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Sailing up my dirty stream, still I love it, and I'll keep the dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River will once again run clear. Starts high in the mountains of the north, crystal clear, and I see trickles forth with just a few floating wrappers of chewing gum dropped by some hikers to warn of things to come. At Glen Falls, 5,000 honest hands work at the Consolidated Paper plant. 5 million gallons of waste a day. Why should we do it any other way? Down the valley, 1 million toilet chains find my Hudson so convenient a place to drain. And each little city says to me, do you think that sewage plants come free? Out in the ocean, they say the water's clear, but I live right on the river here. Halfway between the mountains and the sea, tacking to and fro, the thought occurs to me, sailing up my dirty stream, still I love it, and I'll keep the dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River will once again run clear. That someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River and my country will run clear.
Tim Holt on the Jefferson Exchange with the Pete Seeger song Sailing Up My Dirty Stream. And maybe people don't realize it wasn't just the Cuyahoga River that was a dirty river in those days, which got famous for being the one that burned in Cleveland. The Hudson was quite dirty back then. I lived in the greater New York area in the 60s and 70s, and it looked like pea soup by the time it got down to Manhattan. So it was not a very pretty river. But Pete Seeger did live long enough to see it get cleaned up substantially by the things he supported, like the Clean Water Act.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very successful effort and a very clever way to publicize the effort by, you know, having this very striking-looking old-time sailing ship sailing up and down the Hudson River. So
that's a lot of fun that he was able to see that the success there. We have about 3 minutes left here. If you want to take us out with something or sing something else toward the end, Tim Holt again will be appearing at the Medford Library March 31st, Rouche Library April 1st, Jacksonville Library April 2nd. So a number of chances to catch Tim singing his folk songs around the region in the days ahead.
Yeah, nice to be on the program. One song I'm going to take you out on is, it's actually an old English ballad called The Water is Wide. A lot of your listeners may be familiar with it. It was popularized in this country by Pete Seeger, and he wrote the last verse in this version that I'm going
to
sing.
All right, so this is The Water is Wide. May take us out to the end of the show. Tim Holt, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Nice to be here. Water is wide, I cannot cross over, neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that can carry two, and both shall row, my love and I. There is a ship, and she sails the sea. She's loaded deep, as deep can be, but not so deep as the love I'm in. I know not how I sink or swim, the water is wide, I cannot cross over, neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that can carry two, and both shall row, my love and I. Now here's the Pete Seeger verse. The seagulls wheel, they turn and dive. The mountain stands beside the sea. This world we know turns round and round, and all for them. And you and me, the water is wide, I cannot cross over, neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that can carry two, and both shall row.